time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
A Thursday edition of the show. Thank you, Chad Erickson, for that introduction. We got a lot to do over the next 60 minutes. Andrew Marchand does a great job on all things sports media with The Athletic. He is the best in the biz. He will join us to talk about this saga of an NBA media rights deal. How crazy is that story? We'll talk about that coming up in a few minutes. Also, Jake Brown, who does a great job, Mets podcast host, The Sick Podcast, Mets Magic. Get some thoughts with him on a Mets team that's going in one direction and a Yankees team that's going in the complete opposite direction. We start things out, though, in the NFL, and there is Sam Yarnell, ladies and gentlemen, to hang out on the show. Wow, I actually have the Mets orange mic cover on here. You like that? It's nice. I just realized that. All right, Sam Yarnell, let's talk a bit about the NFL and go around some of these, you know, training camp stories. I hate seeing the injury stuff. And there's already so many of these injury stories that are popping up. But I'm going to focus on three stories to start the show today. Lamar Jackson. Every year, the guy is sick. It's like you can set your watch by it. Every year, Lamar Jackson is going to get sick at some point. And here it is. He's been sick. He's missing practice. He only practiced for an hour yesterday as he made his debut. Todd Monken's going to say, oh, no, it's no big deal. It doesn't matter. Everything's going to be fine. Coming off another disappointing playoff performance, the struggles that he's had in the postseason. You had John Harbaugh out there trying to defend his quarterback, saying the team takes it personally. But at the end of the day, they got to get Lamar Jackson back on the field.
Yeah, you know, Lamar Jackson's immune system may be his worst attribute as a quarterback, because it seems like every summer this is always kind of the case. Whenever he comes back into camp, he'll have to miss a few days because he's sick. It's really unfortunate, because we saw last season, like, Lamar is very much in the prime of his career, and Harbaugh came out obviously after the contract was signed and has been very defensive of Lamar, and I think it's all well earned. I think that Lamar Jackson is probably the best quarterback in that division, but that's a conversation for a different day. He'll be an MVP candidate this year. I don't have any doubt in my mind. I think there's value on him to win the MVP this year. But if they can't keep him on the field, I mean, such is the case with any team in the National Football League, right? If you can't keep your MVP candidate quarterback on the field, you're going to run into problems. So hope for the best for Lamar. Obviously, we're used to seeing this, and it never really extends into the regular season. If he misses time in the regular season, it's always like a physical ailment. But, you know, you never like to see somebody get sick.
I got to be honest. The number on Baltimore as a future is shocking to me. That they have the second best odds to win the Super Bowl is stunning to me, considering Lamar Jackson can't win more than one postseason game. Like that, I mean, in a given postseason, I think he's what, 2-4 lifetime. I can't fathom anybody going and betting on them when you've got a quarterback that's proven he cannot win the big game. Like that just blows my mind that they're at 1,000. Maybe you could explain it better than me.
Well, he's won more than one playoff game in a postseason last season. Like, they were in the AFC Championship game as recently as a season ago, and they looked really good in it.
He's not good in the playoffs, though. We know this by now. His playoff numbers suck.
I think last postseason he really overcame that narrative, and we saw it
not when it mattered,
especially on the way to playing Kansas City in Kansas City. Yeah, I don't. The only argument to me is you could hang the 49ers a little bit higher, but with as many problems as they've got with Brandon Ayuk and now Trent Williams, their best offensive lineman, holding out, I understand the sense behind the making the Ravens that number. I don't feel like there's a better number two contender right now.
Let's talk about Saquon Barkley. Now he's a Philadelphia Eagle. He was a Giant. The Hard Knocks offseason Giants show basically showed his conversation with Joe Schoen about, you know, becoming their decision to let him walk. Barkley said he was kind of surprised by it, but, you know, at the end of the day, he was happy that it definitely portrayed it in a very truthful light. But it's kind of bizarre, you know, that stuff is allowed to get out there, that the Giants let it get out there, because remember, they have editorial control to some degree. It's kind of surprising.
Yeah, there's never going to be a team that signs up for Hard Knocks ever again. Like Joe Schoen being embarrassed to the point that he has, especially with the Saquon Barkley thing. Like, it's just, it's not going to end well in terms of relationships between behind the scenes media and these NFL teams, because they're secretive by nature. And we have found out why in the very recent past. Not only this, like, remember back to the Detroit Hard Knocks. And at that point, I believe was when the whole Josh Reynolds fallout was happening. Maybe that was the Detroit in-season Hard Knocks. There have also been, that's another issue with it, right? Is that they have overstimulated a good thing. So, like, we originally had just the Hard Knocks. It only lasted during training camp, and that was great because you fell in love with these guys who are probably not going to make the roster, and every once in a while one of them did, and you had a new guy to root for all season long. But then they did the Hard Knocks in season, and this Giants thing is a part of the Hard Knocks off season. They've just done too much to a good thing and made it a bad thing.
Giants plus 15,000, by the way, to win the Super Bowl. Real quick, Brandon Ayuk. Brandon Ayuk not practicing for the Niners. Will he be on their roster come week one?
This is tough because of where the wide receiver market's at, right? Obviously, the Jamar Chase situation, the Justin Jefferson situation, which all got figured out in the best way he could have possibly imagined. The wide receiver market is in a really tough spot right now. So I'm not in a place where I could say that he will definitively one way or another, because we don't really know what Brandon Ayuk wants. And I think that's what he's been most effective in doing in this process, is not letting anybody know what he wants.
Trent Williams also not on the field. Contract issues there as well. Niners in disarray. There's the headline. They love it in the Bay Area. All right, Sam, we'll come back for you in a couple of segments for No Line Should Be. But when we return on the program, Jake Brown does a great job on the Mets. They did a good job against the Yankees. We'll get to it next.
When you're a parent, you're always driving everywhere, all the time. To practice, to games, to practice. I say that twice because I definitely did that twice today. And then the other half of your job is to wait. Which is when I had the time to call CarShield. I'm putting on so many miles driving the kids around, it's not a matter of if, but when my car will break down. And when it does, I can't afford the money or the time it normally takes to get my car fixed. The plan I got through CarShield helps pay for expensive repairs on up to 6,000 parts of my car, including vital parts and systems like my engine, transmission, electronics, AC, or, in the dead of winter, my heater. That saves me a ton of money for things like sports equipment, lessons, and gas. Did I mention driving to practice? Bottom line, calling CarShield is a must in my house. The price I locked in with CarShield is the price I'll pay for as long as I cover my car, which says a lot in this world where everything seems to be going up in price.
If you're driving an out-of-warranty car, it's not a matter of if it'll break down, it's when. So you need to call CarShield before it does. Nobody should have to decide whether they should put food on the table or pay for a car repair. It's nice to find a company like CarShield that actually cares about their customers.
And every plan through CarShield includes 24/7 roadside assistance, courtesy towing, battery help, and more. They say practice makes perfect. And with CarShield on my side, I've got one less thing to worry about when it comes to paying for out-of-warranty car repairs. Call CarShield before your car breaks down so you don't miss a single game. Your kids will thank you.
It's not a matter of if your car will break down, but when. But you need to call CarShield before your car breaks down. CarShield gives you a price lock guarantee, which means your monthly price never goes up for as long as you cover your car. Get help paying for expensive repair bills by calling CarShield now. Call 800-689-5350. 800-689-5350. 800-689-5350.
Attention families with a loved one in a nursing home. If your loved one has suffered from bed sores, falls, broken bones, dehydration, or even death, you may be entitled to a substantial settlement. If you have a loved one who was injured in a nursing home, we will find out what happened. State violations are found against nursing homes every day. You have a limited time to file your claim, so don't wait. Call 800-398-5999 and speak with one of our attorneys. The call is confidential and free.
It's good to have you with us on this Thursday edition of Sports Wrap. All right. This is going to pain me to do. Got to bring in Jake Brown. Does a terrific job. He might as well be Mr. Met. Mets fan number one from what I see on social media, and I love following him there. There he is, host of the sick podcast, Mets Magic. All right, the Mets sweep the Yankees, first time since 2013. They take a season series from the Yankees, I think, fifth time in 27 years. And I know for you Mets fans, I'm gonna get myself in trouble with you right now. I know your idea of, you know, a great season is anytime you're just better than the Yankees. So congratulations on that. What has turned around with the Mets since mid-June? We can go all day about how the Yankees have sucked since mid-June and two ships passing each other in the night right now. Give me some sense for what has changed with this team over the last 6 weeks, other than Iglesias coming out with some single that everybody's dancing to.
OMG is the song of the summer, so don't disrespect the number one song in the Latin charts ahead of the likes of Becky G. You could do the dance. You got the whole thing going with the hands in the air. Yep. You know, a big reason is the guy in my shirt right here. He's been making us smile. It's Mr. Smile, Francisco Lindor. The last 2 years, the only player in baseball with 20 homers, 20 doubles, 20 stolen bases. He's putting up historic numbers. And for all the haters and naysayers early on, he's not living up to the contract. He's that guy. Francisco Lindor needs a C on his chest. He is the captain. It's not Pete Alonso. You could argue it's Brandon Nimmo, but Francisco Lindor is the captain of this team. He will be here for the long run. I don't think Pete Alonso will. You know, you laugh at the song and can't lead it. The guy's been 380. The day he got here is when the turnaround started. They played the song months before it came out, and it was their rallying cry in the locker room. He's incredible defensively. He brings a smile. He's bringing a smile to Jeff McNeil, who's now turned his season around. So the Mets have been getting around guys in slumps, and that's J.D. Martinez right now. You know, it's Mark Vientos was in a little bit of one. You know, Pete Alonso was in one. They get around it. Then Jeff McNeil steps up. When McNeil's down, Iglesias steps up. So they've been playing together, and they've been playing a brand of baseball that is easy to root for, and it's exciting to watch. And it's funny because Memorial Day that week, Jorge Lopez throws the glove in the air.
Yes.
He said worst effing team in MLB. He said he didn't actually say that. And then the team meeting happened after that game. Guys held each other accountable. Iglesias got there that first game against the Diamondbacks. And since June 7th, the Mets are the best team in baseball. The Yankees are the second worst team in baseball.
It's sort of hard to fathom. I had Bob Nightingale on the show last week from USA Today, their national senior MLB writer. And he said, when I asked him about the Mets, because they were, you know, they're sort of around the trade, they're sort of around, you know, the right on the line of the wild card. When I asked him about it, he was like, David Sherman and those guys, they were hoping that the Mets would be out of it so they could trade. They didn't want to even be a team in the mix. I know there's thought that they're going to do something here at the deadline, but I believe there's a possibility they just stand pat and say, hey, we're just going to go with what we have, that it's almost like we're playing with house money because we were so bad. Or are they going to go out and do something splashy? Is Alonso available? Do you part ways with him? I mean, where do they go, and what is their biggest need right now, Jake?
It would be unacceptable if David Stern stands pat. I'm sorry. I know this has been a fun run, but to stand pat, they know they have holes. They have to take care of them. Their biggest need is the bullpen. This bullpen has been unreliable. It's been shaky. It was a nice start with getting Phil Maton. He's done a great job of getting guys in the scrap keep, like a gauge. Like they pick up this kid, Alex Young. He pitches back-to-back days. He's striking out, you know, Juan Soto. Like these guys you never heard of are striking out Judge and Soto. Jake Diekman's been terrible. I know he had a great night Tuesday.
Yeah, he did.
And I was there right behind home in Legends, sweating, figuratively and literally sweating, because I was shocked that he struck out Judge and got that save. And I was like, where's Edwin Diaz? Even Edwin Diaz, he has been shaky this season. So there's been nobody in that bullpen outside of maybe Daniel Nunez, who came out of nowhere, who's been a reliable piece, and Jose Budo, who has transitioned to a reliever. So they got to go get a reliever. And I'm not
saying overpay
farm.
You're going to overpay?
Well, you're not going to trade the farm for a Mason Miller or one of these guys, but I've always wanted Tanner Scott. I know he's in the division. I know he might cost a lot, and I know he's a rental. But I think because he's a rental and because the Marlins are out of it and they're going to be sellers, why not take, you know, a mid-level prospect, maybe outfielder Alex Ramirez in the Mets farm system? You're going to have to trade a few prospects. Alonso, I don't think, is going now. I think they've done enough where that is gone. You don't want to shake up the locker room. I don't think Severino's going. Christian Scott, his injury now has shaken things up. You cannot trade a starter now because you just lost one potentially for the season with that UCL injury. So number one is reliever, one or two. Number two would maybe be a back-end starter. And listen, if they may find some of these guys on the scrap heap. Don't forget, in 2015, they got Addison Reed at the end of August, a month after the trade deadline, and he was a big reliever out of that bullpen. So you might find a guy in the waiver wire, an outfielder. They might wait to see if Marte ends up missing more time than they thought. You go get an outfielder. So a bat is what their last need is. First need is definitely a good bullpen piece.
You wouldn't overpay for Mason Miller. Oh,
I don't think the A's would trade him. He's under team control till 2030. He's under team control for five more years.
Yeah, I get it, but they may not be good for five more years.
But he's cheap, and that's their middle name.
They're going to be playing in Sacramento next year when it's 110 in a minor league facility.
They should call them the Sacramento Dollar Trees. Like that's what they are. Dollar fan, the TJ Maxx. But like, I just don't see now their setup guy could be on the move. I think Krejci, I can't pronounce his name, but he's had a good year and he's from Milwaukee, from the Brewers. So David Stearns knows about him. And then the Rays, Fairbanks is the other one. They got Maytone from the Rays. Will they get Fairbanks from the Rays and just
want Fairbanks. You don't want Fairbanks. I've seen enough.
He's better than Adam Ottavino. Yeah, I've seen enough Adam Ottavino.
That's not saying a heck of a lot. Let me ask you, just because you're in New York, is Aaron Boone, he's going to make it through the season, right? There's no scenario by which the Yankees fire Aaron Boone, right?
Asking for a friend. Yeah, I mean, listen, he should be. I agree. I'm also on the side of look at the roster they've put together. That's not an Aaron Boone, that J.D. Davis, Jamai Jones, these guys you never heard of are batting. I agree. You can't be batting J.D. Davis cleanup. And then everyone's like, well, play Ben. Well, Ben Rice has come down to earth, too. I know he's better than J.D. Davis, but the guy's still hitting under 200.
Stanton going down, not Rizzo. I mean, because Rizzo wasn't doing much. The Stanton injury, because he actually was playing pretty well this year. I was even having a conversation a week before he got hurt with Brian Kenny about, is he a Hall of Famer if he gets to 500 home runs? That whole conversation. They miss Stanton in that line. Jake Brown, the Sick Podcast, Mets Magic. Go and check it out. Jake, I always appreciate it. You do great work. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Good luck.
We're coming back on Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere. We keep the conversation moving on this Thursday edition of the show, and I'm happy to do it with my good friend Andrew Marchand, who does a terrific job with The Athletic covering the sports media, hangs out with us for a few minutes on the program today. You're a busy guy these days, huh? I mean, there's no shortage of – I don't think it's ever been this crazy before with all the different sports media news that's out there, so let's jump into it because I only got a segment with you here. The NBA media rights deal. So they've made the decision to go with Prime Video over TNT after TNT says they matched the deal. TNT in turn has come back and said, oh, we think the NBA is misunderstanding the way this whole thing works. So now it sounds like we're going to have a legal battle. Is there a possibility, and I've seen this printed in other places, you might have even said it as well, this idea that the NBA might in the end create something special for TNT, depending on how litigation works out, whether they think they're going to be on the losing side of it, or is this a done deal? It's going to be Prime Video, NBC, and ESPN/Disney.
Well, number one, it's a very unusual circumstance, right? You have a league as big as the NBA, probably the second biggest league that we have in our country, announcing deals for the next 11 years. And they're, one of their partners who's not part of that says, no, we still want to be in. We're still going to be in, and we're going to sue you. So to predict, I don't want to predict, you know, where these things go. They look at the language in the present contract differently. There's no doubt that TNT has back-end rights, which means you have the right to match other deals. The issue is, when those contracts were made, it was about cable television, not streaming. Amazon's just a pure streaming play by the NBA. Is that so? Is it the games? What I've been told from people who've seen, I haven't seen the language, but you know, you can look at it both ways from the NBA point of view, from Turner's point of view, TNT Sports point of view. And so then you get to lawyers. And so I'm not a lawyer and I haven't seen the exact language. And so if you get that far, who knows what happens, right? When you get into court of law. But before you get there, do you make some sort of settlement in those scenarios you played out? Yeah, that doesn't seem impossible if you start getting down this road and things look a certain way where people be like, maybe we don't do that.
Does it feel like the NBA is sort of misreading the room on this, though, in terms of basically discarding and not trying to find a way to keep a deal with TNT in place? I know the Prime Video deal had some sweeteners in terms of them paying more money up front and that sort of stuff and escrow and all this. But does it feel like NBA is sort of missing the fact that inside the NBA is an institution, that the NBA on TNT has become an institution from a opinion standpoint? And as somebody who covers this for a living, does it feel like the NBA is sort of missing the boat on this?
Yeah, I don't really think so. Like, I would call Inside the NBA the greatest sports studio show of all time. But I also know that things end, right? There's never, like, we always, if you look back the history of basically anything, but I cover sports media and that's my passion. Those things end. Like, when Fox got the NFC package from CBS, that was a stunner back in the day, early 90s. When NBC lost the NBA to ESPN, and then Turner stayed on. That was a stunner. So these things happen. When Amazon got in to the NFL, that was, you know, a surprise. So I think things end, and the world's changed, right? TNT is, you know, a cable company. The cable, we all know this. Cable's going the wrong direction. The NBA wants to be with a streaming company that has trillions of dollars, and these are 11-year deals. And so where's cable going to be in 5-6 years? Do they, you know, is Max the same thing as Amazon Prime Video? I mean, if you're betting on a business.
Well, that's why I'm glad you brought this up, because James Dolan, you're from New York, so you've seen this story undoubtedly. James Dolan's one of the most outspoken owners about what this deal means, because unlike a lot of regional sports networks, no offense to the RSNs that carry us, RSNs are having trouble. They're losing money. They're losing programming because teams are pulling away from the model. MSG is one of the few, the one that James Dolan owns along with the Knicks, that is still very viable and does very well because of the fact they have the Knicks and the Rangers and so on. Is this another death knell? Is this Prime Video, NBA deal, all this, is this another death knell for RSNs? I mean, is the RSN model dying?
Yeah, I mean, it is in some markets. You mentioned MSG Network, the Yankees on the YES Network, the Mets with SNY. The Dodgers have a deal that goes forever for so much money. They're not going anywhere. But the smaller markets, predominantly, they can't, they just that outlay that was going for so many years, it just can't be afforded. The teams would actually love to stay with the RSN. It's a great model for them. But you know, that there's, this has been going on for years, and what's going to happen most likely is that games are going to be direct to consumer, within market, as well as out of market. And we've already seen that in a lot of places. Like, you can get YES Network in this area, and not have a cable subscription. Mm-hmm. MLB Network just announced yesterday they're going direct to consumer. That's where everyone's going to go. The problem is that the cable model is so great, because if you're a regional sports network on basic cable, that means everyone who has basic cable paid you every month. So even, let's say, you're getting $1 a month. But if grandma, let's say, or grandpa does not like the Yankees or baseball, they're still paying that dollar a month to you. So that's a great business because people who don't use your service. Now, people don't understand the cable model, right? That actually for that person who doesn't watch baseball, it still actually wasn't, let's say they like the cooking channel, that actually wasn't a bad model. It's very misunderstood. Now, where the money should be allocated and look, it's complicated, but it's not as bad for the consumer as that may sound. Like, I'm paying for something I don't need. Yeah, but you wouldn't have the Food Network because that network supporting your other network. Needless to say, that model is going away. Every, you know, month, the cable subscribers basically goes down. And so what these companies like ESPN is going to go direct to consumer. The reason they're doing that is that number that's going down, it's around 65, 70 million. They want to stop that. They want it to start going up again. So how are they going to do that? They're going to try to get people who never had cable, will give ESPN direct to consumer, or there's other options that they're making and you don't need a cable company. So if you're the NBA, where do you want to be? This model that's going down this way or this potential other model for 11 years from now, it's a great success for Amazon Prime Video. ESPN does well digitally, and you can keep getting these huge $77 billion over 11 years. That's like Jason Page money.
Oh, how I wish. Andrew Marchand does a terrific job with The Athletic covering all things sports media. Listen, I appreciate it. I know you've been busy the last few days, and I imagine you'll be busy some more. Thanks for coming on for a few minutes today.
Great. Thank you, Jason.
We're coming back with more Sports Wrap. Don't go anywhere. Let's take it to segment four on this Thursday edition of Sports Wrap. Something new on the show, officially. It's no line, or make sure I say it right, because there's a question mark. No line should be. Sam Yarnell is here, because he is the Prince of Picks. So if we're going to talk no line, should be. Sam Yarnell is the guy you do it with. The New York Knicks have signed Tom Thibodeau to a contract extension. It will keep him with the Knicks through the 27-28 NBA season. So, Sam Yarnell, I ask you, the Knicks making an appearance in the NBA Finals by the end of the 27-28 season. Notice I said appearance in the NBA Finals. By the end of the 27-28 NBA season. No line, but there should be. The yes is at plus 400. The no is at minus 300. Which are you taking?
Well, if that's the line, Jason, I'm taking the yes all day long. It's not even close. We got to talk about your line making here for a second, because if you're giving me 3 years, that's essentially three chances at this team with the core that they've produced to win the Eastern Conference Finals, a place where they just were this past season. Yeah, 4-1, I'm going to lay the house on that. If you hung a number at like plus 200, different conversation. I think it's more like a plus 175 on the yes, right? Because again, you've got three chances, and no matter what they do wrong this season, they can learn from, build from, and come back ready to go again next season. Every intention that the Knicks have shown us is that they are going to be contenders for at least the next 5 years. So anytime in the next 3 years for them to get what, five games better than they were this season? Yeah, I'm going to take that six ways to Sunday at 4-1.
I've seen enough Knicks. God, I've seen enough Knicks. I've seen enough Tom Thibodeau, who you know, I he's that guy. He's the Lamar Jackson. You know what? Tom Thibodeau is the Lamar Jackson of NBA head coaches. Win you a bunch of games in the regular season. He'll get you to the playoffs. He'll win a round or two. And then you know what? Inevitably, his team will wet the bed because they'll either be hurt or they'll make a bad decision or whatever it may be. That's actually a really good, that's a good comp. Tom Thibodeau and Lamar Jackson. So I might lay the juice. and take the no on this, just because the Knicks will find a way to disappoint their fans. And I don't know if in the next 3 years, the Knicks will ever be able to be definitively better, demonstrably better, than a Boston Celtics team that just won an NBA championship. And I've got to give the Celtics their flowers. I am now sold. So I'll say no. I will take the no at minus 300.
Real quick. So first of all, my Tom Thibodeau comp, Phillip Rivers. I mean, come on. Phillip Rivers gave it at all, gave it his all through the first like 14 weeks of the regular season. Yeah. He was bruised and battered, had nothing left to give, but found himself in the playoffs and then burnt out and no one around him cared.
That's not bad.
Real quick. The other thing I was going to say on the Celtics, they're in this second apron now, Jason. This is uncharted waters, and it seems like the whole rest of the NBA is very scared of it. I'm a little less willing to give the Eastern Conference to the Celtics for the next 3 years, solely based on the cap position they've put themselves in with the Tatum and the Brown contracts.
Second one, no line, should be. We talked about Lamar Jackson missing or only participating in an hour of practice earlier in the show. Number of playoff games that Lamar Jackson will win this postseason. You have three choices. Over a half a playoff game, means one playoff win. Even money I will give you. Over 1.5, plus 200. And over 2.5, plus 350. You get to pick one. Which are you taking?
I'm going to take the over 1.5, and I'm going to shut the book down with it. Lamar Jackson, you're giving me 2-1 with arguably a better team. Let's not forget he's got Derrick Henry behind him now. Arguably a better team to do exactly what he did last year at 2-1 in an AFC that has gotten a little weaker in the offseason.
I'm like FanDuel. I'm giving you juiced numbers. I'm giving you boosted numbers. I mean,
it's incredible. There are boosts on all these. It's like NFL future boost, NFL future boost, and I'm clicking away. But yeah, 2-1. I love Lamar over 1.5 playoff wins this season. I guess I'm more bullish on the Ravens than a lot of people, but I really just don't see any way that this team got demonstrably worse when all of the competition in the AFC has.
If I'm picking one, I'd probably take over a half because I think even Lamar Jackson can manage to figure out a way to win one playoff game this year. But I don't know if I'd go any higher than that. I don't have a lot of confidence.
Here's another way. I get to over 1.5, right? Because the wild card round obviously counts for the purpose of this exercise. Absolutely. So let's think doomsday. Lamar and the Ravens are a wild card team because the Bengals win the AFC North. I like Lamar over 1.5, and then all he has to do is get through the divisional round.
You know, that division, there may not be a team under 500. I don't think there's going to be a team under 500. That'd be an interesting one to do a number on. We're coming back with something to consider next. We got odds and ends to wrap up the show in about 10 minutes. Don't forget, by the way, if you have not done so yet, make sure to subscribe to the Sports Wrap with Jason Page podcast. It's available on all your favorite podcasting platforms, including Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, you name it. We are on all of them. And now, without any further delay, time for something to consider. Sam Yarnell. Something to consider, Sam Yarnell. For your consideration, Red Sox players, fans, do you really want to go to fight? Is it really throwdown territory when somebody on an opposing team makes fun of one of your players who got busted for indecent exposure because he was manipulating himself in a certain way in a car, in a parking lot? If you missed it yesterday, Rockies, Red Sox, Rockies win by a couple of touchdowns. What was it? 20-7, I think, was the final in Denver. Reese McGuire and Cal Quantrill coming to blows, pushes, shoves, talking, yelling. After Cal Quantrill chided Reese McGuire for his arrest and being cited for indecent exposure for something he was doing in his car. Yeah, you can kind of figure it out from there. You don't need to read lips. Sam Yarnell, I don't even know what to say.
Yeah, this was tough.
I'm gonna let you hang yourself on TV right now, in other words.
So Jason mentioned it. This wasn't Broncos Patriots. It was 20-7, but it was Rockies Red Sox. And that's where you gotta start with all this. This is kind of where I go whenever these kinds of things happen. There's always someone who doesn't know their role, who kind of perpetuates all of it. In this case, it's Reese McGuire. Dog, your team never had a lead in this game. After the bottom of the first inning, your team was down by 3, and that was the narrowest the deficit ever was at the end of an inning. Reese McGuire, your OPS this season is under 600. I mean, Reese McGuire, you went 0-for-4 with a strikeout in this game. Reese McGuire, you did that in your past. You put your head down and go back to the dugout, dude. You cannot. I don't care if you want to stand up for yourself. Having that done to you by Cal Quantrill, and good for you, Cal Quantrill, for dominating the Red Sox lineup for 6 strong innings, and then saying that to boot, that dude is awesome. You cannot, if you're Reese McGuire, you cannot stand up for yourself in that situation. Nope. It's all part of the reprimand for the action. It's all part of the consequences that come with it.
I'm sure Josh Giddey hurt a lot worse for the Oklahoma City Thunder this year than Reese McGuire hurt there. Clayton Kershaw coming back. Finally, the Dodgers get back the future Hall of Famer. Come on, let's go.
Just really quick, while it's on my mind, on the Cal Quantrill Reese McGuire thing, to go back to it for a second. Going into yesterday, there was an article that was put out, but it may have been Jeff Pass, and it was someone in the baseball media, about potential trades that may happen. And one of them that was speculated was Cal Quantrill to be traded to the Boston Red Sox. I don't think that's going to happen anymore. That's probably off the table now.
Yeah.
Clayton Kershaw, yeah, very exciting. He's just under 60 strikeouts away from joining the 3,000 strikeout club, which, elite company, right? We knew he was a Hall of Famer before, but further cements his legacy. He would be the 19th or 20th guy in baseball history to join the 3,000 strikeout club. So that's awesome. And hopefully he's come back with enough time left in this season to get it done before we reach the playoffs. But just another chance to watch history. I know he's on the back end of his career, but it's always special to watch him pitch during the regular season, not during the playoffs.
There's a name I would not have expected to see on the 3,000 strikeout list. You ready? Even though he was a great pitcher and pitched for a long time, I would not have expected to see Greg Maddux on that list.
Oh, interesting.
3,371 strikeouts for Maddux. I mean, he did pitch for 22 years, but that's right. Probably of all the names on the list, if I read them off, I'd be like, yep, yep, yep. And then I get to his and I'm like, wow. That one kind of surprises me. That wouldn't have been one I expected to see on that list.
Well, I think the thing with Maddux, right, is that he pounded the strike zone. So it doesn't quite, it doesn't surprise me as much. But
he pitched to contact.
He
wasn't afraid to pitch to contact.
Right, exactly. But he seldom strayed outside of the zone. So you'll get strikeouts naturally just doing that, right? And when you pitch for 22 years at the level he did, peppering the zone, you'll rack up 3,000 Ks.
Flag bearer for the United States at the Olympics. We talked about this. LeBron James got it for the men. Coco Gauff gets it for the women. Katie Ledecky probably would have gotten it, but she's competing the next day, so she's not taking part in opening ceremonies. Just want to make that known. Simone Biles, by the way, we talked about this the other day, never been a flag bearer for the U.S. at opening ceremonies. It should be mentioned, she was a flag bearer for closing ceremonies for the Olympic Games, whether it was 4 years ago or 4 years before that. She has been one for closing ceremonies, but my answer to that is nobody watches the closing ceremonies. So who cares?
Exactly. You said it perfectly. And I will say, hand up accountability. When we did this show a couple of weeks ago and I mentioned the Simone Biles thing initially, I didn't realize there was a man and a woman who both bared the flag. So maybe the LeBron conversation can be revisited. But Simone, absolutely snubbed from this. It's got to be her in this spot. I don't see how they did that.
We'll wrap it up with odds and ends next. Sports Wrap continues on this Thursday. I was thinking about taking tomorrow off, Friday, but we're not going to. Nick Ferguson will be on the show tomorrow, former NFL safety. And even though there's no NASCAR race this week, it's still a NASCAR Friday, and Tino Patino will be here, come hell or high water. All right, ladies and gentlemen, without any further delay, time for some odds and ends. Odds and ends, Sam Yarnell. I said I wasn't going to talk about him anymore. I'm breaking my own rule. God, USA soccer is bad. It is so bad. I turned on the Olympics yesterday. Did you know the Olympics already started? I didn't. I just happened to be scrolling through YouTube TV, and I'm like, Olympics, USA, France, live right now. I clicked on, I'm like, the Olympics have already started? I don't know why they do this thing where the opening ceremonies are after the games have actually started. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Like, then just do the opening ceremony earlier. Oh, we gotta have it on Friday night. Bigger TV audience. USA gets trounced by France yesterday, 3-0. They had some offensive opportunities on France's end of the field in the second half of this game. Thierry Henry and his France team, they win 3-0. I don't know if you saw any of it, but just USA soccer is just an embarrassment. It is an embarrassment.
Okay. I hear you. I see you. You are understood. Let me explain to you Olympic soccer now. Because Olympic soccer, contrary to popular belief, is not the same soccer we just watched in Copa America or Euro 2024, right? This is U23.
Yes.
So this is all the guys who are very, very young. Obviously, the bigger names also opt out of the Olympics. However, when you have these loaded countries with teams that have very young studs playing all around the world, like France, who is the favorite to win the gold medal at, I believe, 4-1, it may be shorter now, they're going to beat you 3-0. That's what happens. Alexander Lacazette, who scored a banger of a goal in this game, is a prominent starter in Europe and gets meaningful minutes on a club team. So there was no Christian Pulisic in this game. There was no Giovanni Reyna. There was no Josh Sargent. There was no Tim Owea.
Can I just hold on 1 second. Can I just combat that, though, with one thing? Because I totally get what you're saying, the U23 thing. It also goes to show, though, that the future isn't even that bright for us. You know what I mean? Like that, you can say that, you know, all those other countries are loaded and deep. We've had so long to put together a soccer program in this country that can compete. I'm not even saying win gold or bronze or silver. Just compete. Give me something. And they just give me nothing. Every time I want to believe, they give me nothing.
Well, they're back in action Saturday, so.
Lucky me. Guess what? It's on a Saturday. I will not be watching. And we know where I'll be on Saturday? Viva Las Vegas! Viva! Viva! That's where I'll be. So I will not be watching. Although we already have the cable hooked up. Anyway. Around the horn, which is as much an institution on ESPN. People don't realize this show's been on forever. I am a big Tony Reale, not a small fan. I love Tony Reale on this show. I don't know what he would do, how he would be on anything else. But on this show, I think Tony Reale is fantastic. I have always loved the concept of scoring sports debates. I think it's a terrific show. And there's word that, according to Awful Announcing, it's going to go away before the start of the 2025 NFL season. I'm kind of bummed. I'm not going to lie. I like the show.
You're exactly right. It's a staple. Tony Reale, by the way, very nice guy. Hate to see this happen to him. I remember, this is going to date me, and that's embarrassing. I remember coming home from like middle and high school and, you know, doing my homework and then whatever. My parents still weren't home yet from their various jobs. And I turn on Around the Horn. And I think that, like, for a lot of kids my age and maybe adults too, I can't really think for adults, but for a lot of kids my age, that was super important in the grand scheme of like dealing with social media and how we handle sports on social media, because there's always an element of you have to explain yourself. And Around the Horn and even Pardon the Interruption, they both do a very good job of laying out arguments and explaining themselves. So it's really unfortunate to see this kind of television leave for what you can only expect to be some flamboyant debate show.
Over 4,500 episodes of Around the Horn. That's how long that show has been on the air. So,
every day, every week, every year, man.
Yeah, nah, and they've done a great job over there. I actually said two things I wanted to do in my life. I wanted to be famous enough to be on an episode of Hollywood Squares. I always wanted to be a square on Hollywood Squares. That was a goal. I know. It was a goal of mine in life. And the other was I wanted to be on Around the Horn. Always wanted to be on Around the Horn because I just thought it was always a great concept. It's going to do it for us. We're going on a 23-hour break. See what I did there? We'll be back with you on Friday. Another edition of Sports Wrap then. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to Andrew Marchand and Jake Brown. We'll see you later.